Okay, I'm going to start now. I will have to speak from this microphone here because the other microphone died. A couple of announcements. Let's see with a show of hands, how many people are aware of the fact that the assignment is due? Out. Okay. Okay, good. So the assignment is out. You should download it from the webpage and start working through it. I've also posted an announcement in the, well, John has set up this user group chat thing online. If you want to get the announcements, you need to actually register. If you don't register there, you will not get the announcements. In any case, if there are friends of yours and you know them and they haven't gotten the announcement, please let them know, okay? Labs this week are going to go over the assignment questions, and if you are stuck, I suggest you read through the thing before you go to the lab session and ask the demonstrators questions if you have any. The TA of this class. And it's due November 7th, I think, so you have some time. Okay, so today's lecture is on parsing, well, is on phrase structure, and then we're going to do a little bit of parsing. And the parsing we do today is just to get you started. Nobody uses these parsers nowadays, but you will see why. And then tomorrow, well, Thursday's lecture is going to be about more realistic parsers. And we build up slowly. So we start with phrase structure, which is a prerequisite for parsing. Then we're going to talk a little bit about parsing, and then we will move on to realistic parsing algorithms. Okay. So this is what I said just now. We're going to cover phrase structure because you need the phrase structure for parsing. Then we're going to talk a bit about what phrases are, what the grammar is, a small fragment of English, and then we will move on to parsing. We will talk about recursion, which is a prerequisite, structural ambiguity, and then we will introduce two classes of parsing algorithms, recursive descent parsing and shift-reduce parsing. Okay. So one important thing about phrase structure and grammars in natural language is the notion of a head. So I want you to take a look here at, so I'm going to be moving, and if you have, I'll try to shout, but I don't know whether people can hear me, and I will lose my voice in the end. So if you can't hear, just let me know. Right, okay, so here on top, you see the parts of speech. So we have noun, we have adjective, we have verb, we have preposition. These parts of speech then will be members of phrases, such as a noun phrase, an adjective phrase, and so on and so forth. So far, we've only have looked at the terminal symbols, the nouns, the verbs, the adjectives. The phrases are the non-terminal symbols of a linguistic, of a natural language grammar. So the class that a word belongs to is closely linked to the name of the phrase it appears in. So a noun phrase will always have a noun, a verb phrase will have a verb. And in English, this differs, of course, in other languages, the head of a phrase tends to appear in the middle. And by head, we usually mean the part of the phrase that carries most of its meaning. So look at this phrase here. An angry duck that tried to bite me, okay? It happens. It has actually happened to me. It wasn't a duck, it was a swan. I was feeding the ducks and the swan came and, oh my God, my hand almost got chopped off. So we have an angry duck here that tried to bite me. And you see the structure. We have a determiner, optional adjectives, a noun, and then we could either have a preposition or a relative clause. Here we have a relative clause. Can people guess what the head of this phrase is? Is the head angry? Is it duck? Who said duck? Good. The head of this phrase is duck. Let's go further down. So the above example was an example of a noun phrase. We're going to move now to the verb phrases. So verb phrases are commonly of the form, we have a verb in the middle, i.e. the head, and then we can have optionally an auxiliary, like I will die, will is the auxiliary, or an adverb, I will soon die, hopefully not. Then we have an argument, so die doesn't work with argument, I will soon eat my dinner, not really. And we can have an adjunct, I will soon eat my dinner with a straw. Okay, with a straw can be an adjunct. And you have here an example, would usually eat artichokes for dinner. What is the head in this phrase? Eat, good. Now, this is the case for English, and for the purposes of this class, English is what you need to know about. However, bear in mind that this is a peculiarity of English. Heads in other languages tend to occur in other places. So in Japanese, Korean, Hindi, Urdu, and other languages that are called head final, the head will appear at the end of the phrase. And this is actually quite handy if you're a computer to recognize the head. There's other problems, though, with this. In Irish, Welsh, Scots, Gaelic, and other languages, we will find the head in the beginning. Do we have any Gaelic speakers in the audience? Any Irish speakers in the... Okay, is that right? The head is in the beginning. Yeah, good, see? It's head initial, so you would start with the head, like you would say things like, I don't know, correct me, dug an angry that tried to bite me, or eat dinner tomorrow with a fork. So there are differences, and in English it's usually like in the middle. There's stuff before, and there's stuff after, and then there's the head. Now, the notion of the head is important, because if you try to do any corpus processing, what we really are after are the heads most of the time. A verb and a noun that it appears with, and we strip all the rest, all the other little words, and we are just left with the heads that give us semantic content. And so it's an important notion. Okay, so what are the properties that we want a natural language grammar to have? Okay, a very nice property that unfortunately we cannot guarantee is to be non-ambiguous. So let's forget that. Now, Chomsky, you've heard of Chomsky, right? Chomsky number form, the Chomsky hierarchy. Chomsky, as far as linguistics is concerned, is mega God. Not God, like the boss of God, if you can think about it. Like, I came across Chomsky through his political writings. He's very much anti-establishment and whatnot. But he's, well, he's the world's, I would say, most famous linguist. And he has done, well, I mean, he went a bit wacko afterwards and invented like some theories that make no sense. But anyway, so right now, this course talks about Chomsky in the 60s, where he was like reasonable. So he said that a grammar should be interesting and satisfying. So by interesting, we do not mean that the grammar tells us jokes. We mean it should be a finite specifications or specification of the strengths of the language rather than a list of sentences. And this is reasonable, right? We want to have a grammar that actually generates the sentences, generative capacity, rather than listing the list of sentences. This is not a grammar, this is like a memory. This is a lookup table. So first of all, it should be a finite specification of the strengths of the language, and then it should be revealing. What do we mean by revealing? It should allow strengths to be associated with meaning in a systematic way. And that means when I have the verb eat and its subject, i.e., I eat is revealing in the sense that it tells us that the verb will take an NP and perhaps another NP, and this will be a unit, and we can combine these units in a meaningful way. So we get grammatical sentences rather than word or sentence salad. Now, we could add another property that is important for computers. It should capture structural and distributional properties of the language. So the structural, you understand it, it should represent the structure of the language. So if English has the head in the middle, I cannot suddenly write a grammar that parses sentences for English where the head is in the end of the language. Right? So I should at least write a grammar that preserves the structure of the language. So, and also distributional properties of the language, and this is important, where things tend to co-occur. So, for example, where are the heads of the phrases, how a sentence becomes a question, so the grammar should tell us, have a transformation rule that tells us, look, if you have, I eat spaghetti and I want to turn it into a question, the way to turn it into a question is to add a how in the beginning and say, how do I eat spaghetti? Question mark in the end. Okay? Now, In this course, we will be talking about natural language grammars being context-free grammars. And this is an assumption we will make throughout, which is almost right. So context-free grammars are good enough for natural language. We will see, I think it's the last lecture I'm giving in this course, that natural language are not actually context-free. They're mildly context-sensitive, and we'll have a lecture on this, but context-free grammars are a good enough approximation. And we'll also only talk about phrase structure grammars, but there are other more modern grammar formalisms that capture the structure and distributional properties a bit in a more detail, such as categorical grammar. And this is for you to be aware that, you know, we are talking about one particular incarnation of a grammar, which we will use throughout this course. And this is not bad, it's actually quite good, because most of research in NLP these days uses these kinds of grammars, context-free grammars. There is no parser out there which has mildly context-sensitive properties. This would be a nightmare to do. Okay, so let's try to construct a tiny grammar for English. Assume you are a grammarian, and assume that you want to capture in a grammar the structural and the distributional properties of sentences like the following. A duck walked in the park. The man walked with a duck. You made a duck out of paper or out of chocolate. You made her duck. A man with a telescope saw you. A man saw you with a telescope. You saw a man with a telescope. So here, what we want to do is to write grammatical rules that describe the phrases and lexical rules that describe the non-terminals, the words. So in natural language, phrases are non-terminals, words are terminals, okay? Now, how would you go about doing this, given what I've told you so far? What would you look for in a sentence? The first thing, yes, that's right. So we would go and look at the verb. Hello. Okay, so the verbs here are walked, made, saw, saw. So we have three verbs. What else would you look for? So the next thing after you, right? The noun phrases, exactly. And we start in English usually with the noun phrases that precede the verb, because these tell us who is doing what. So here we have a duck, the man, you, a man, you. So this is the nouns before the verb. Now we're going to look at the nouns after the verb. So a duck, her, you, a man. As you can see, there are some noun phrases, like a duck or a man, but there's also some pronouns. These are also terminals in the language, like you. And then after I've exhausted the nouns and the verbs, I may want to look at the prepositions, such as in the park, with a duck, with a telescope. And once I break down the sentences into little chunks that I characterize as phrases, then suddenly I can write a grammar, because I have the PPs, the prepositional phrases, I have the VPs, I have the NPs, and I also have the words. So here's a grammar, let's call it G1, and you have on the left-hand side the productions of the grammar that are the grammatical rules, these are the non-terminals, and on the right-hand side we have the terminals. And you see here we have determiners, we have nouns, pronouns, verbs, and prepositions. Now here's a question for you. This is not our clicker question. Does G1 produce a finite or an infinite number of sentences? Remember, Chomsky wants us to have a grammar with explanatory power that can generate sentences and is not only restricted to a finite list of sentences. So does this grammar, G1, have a look at it, would it produce a finite or an infinite number of sentences?
Finite.
Finite, why?
Because we can't add more lexical rules?
Yes, exactly, because this grammar lacks a very important property that grammars ought to have, i.e. recursion. Now, recursion in a grammar makes it possible to generate an infinite set of strings or number of sentences. And we have two kinds of recursion. We have here direct recursion and indirect recursion. In direct recursion, in a non-terminal on the left-hand side of the rule also appears in its right-hand side. So here we have VP going to VP, This is direct recursion. So from the VP, I can generate another VP, and you can see how it can go. I can never stop. VP goes to VP to VP to VP to VP to VP to VP, and the sky is the limit. So this is direct recursion. Indirect recursion is when I have a non-terminal which is expanded via several steps into a sequence of symbols containing that non-terminal on my right-hand side, on my left-hand side. So here, I have the noun phrase that goes to the terminal, a noun and a prepositional phrase. Here, there is no noun phrase appearing on the right-hand side. However, the PP can be expanded into a preposition and an NP. And again, I have recursion because the NP appears in the left-hand side. Something similar, actually, John talked about in a couple of lectures back. Okay, so we've discussed one property of the grammar, which is the ability to generate an infinite number of strings. We've introduced recursion. Let's talk about structural ambiguity. Structural ambiguity, unfortunately, is a side effect of the fact that we want to capture the structure of languages. And languages can have several structures, and if we write up rules to capture the structures, the rules will apply at several places, and one word will have several parts of speech, and the whole thing explodes. So let's look at this beautiful sentence. This sentence is famous. You saw a man with a telescope. Can somebody here tell me what the two meanings of you saw a man with a telescope are without looking at the trees? Yes. Exactly. So you saw the man with your telescope versus you saw a man holding the telescope. Now, this tree here, can you tell me which meaning it represents? A man holding the telescope, exactly, in his hand. And this is the first interpretation. I saw the man with the telescope. Okay? My grammar, the grammar I just showed you, can actually generate these two interpretations. So we are doing what Chomsky said. We have to be revealing, i.e. the grammar shows the meaning of the language, and it goes hand in hand with the different meanings we get by this structural ambiguity. Now, these three illustrate a property called attachment ambiguity. So the attachment ambiguity has to do with a PP node, which can either be part of the VP here. So in the sentence, you saw a man with a telescope. When the man is holding the telescope, the PP is under the VP. In the other case, when the man is actually watching someone with a telescope, the PP is attaching to the NP. So there is ambiguity as to where to put the PP, and this causes the different structures. So this grammar that we've just sketched gives us only one analysis for the sentence, you made her duck. So this analysis is you made her duck, which means you made a duck for someone. So you made her duck. Her duck is a noun phrase, and this duck could be out of paper or out of chocolate. So somebody sits there and constructs a duck for somebody else. Now, there is a second interpretation where we make something for someone. So I made my friend a duck. This is different from I made her duck, where the hare could be his duck or whatever, and it's a noun phrase. I made my friend a duck means I have two arguments, my friend and the duck. Now, this grammar does not handle the second interpretation of you made her duck. Can people think, I'll go back to the grammar, think for a second what kind of rule we'd need to add. I'll show you the grammar. And look at the VP, right? Because we need to change the VP. Yes. The VP goes to that. You want to add a rule that goes to the determinant of the verb. That how would this rule solve the problem of I made you duck? Okay, that's a suggestion. This would not really solve the problem. Do we have any other suggestions? Yes. Yes, right. So a verb phrase, it's a good effort, a valiant effort, sir, it's good. So a VP goes to NP and NP. So we need two noun phrases. I made my friend or you. This is the one NP, and the second NP is duck. So I'll show you the tree. Oh, sorry. Here. So we add noun phrase goes to noun. Okay, this is trivial. And then the important rule is that the VP goes to the two NPs. So we have the one interpretation here. I made her duck, where duck is a noun phrase, and the other one where we have two noun phrases here. Now, in this case, the culprit for these different structures is not the attachment, where the prepositional phrase attaches. It's not like I saw the man holding the telescope versus I saw the man using it to see somebody else. It has to do with the simple fact that I don't think this is right, actually. I don't think it's caused by part of speech ambiguity. It is just caused by the fact that we have two different structures. I'll update this. This is wrong. The duck is noun in both cases. Okay. Third question. There is a third analysis for I made you duck. And this is really caused by part of speech ambiguity. What did you make her do? I made her duck. So for non-native speakers, duck means move my head or body quickly downwards. So if I'm going to throw a ball at you, you're very likely that you will duck unless you want to actually take the ball and kick it back. Now, this is kind of complicated because we have a verb, I make, and then it takes another verb following it. And also it takes a noun phrase, so I made you duck. So the way that linguists would analyze this is they would say, okay, we have a verb phrase here, which is followed by another verb phrase and a small clause. And the small clause is the you duck. And the you duck then we would analyze as an NP and a VP. And so if you really wanted to parse I made you duck, you would have this analysis here. Accusative is the case of you in this case. It's not really required. Linguistically speaking, this is correct. And the VP cannot have tense. So you cannot say things like, I made you ducked, or I made you ducking, or I made you will duck. This is not well formed in English. So you can see that if you really want to cover all the interpretations and all the possibilities of a sentence in English, and this is a very small sentence, you have to write more rules. And the more rules you write, the more things become bigger. We have a bigger grammar. And the more rules you have, the more ambiguity you will have. This is for certain. So these are the three analyses of I made you duck. Do we really want to do this by hand? No. On the other hand, we can't do it using LL1 parsing. This is also not possible. So we'll see Thursday, most likely. Well, we'll see a bit of it today, how we will actually do this automatically. But before we do this, I think it's clicker time. So if you have your clickers, take them out till I set this thing up. Okay. So here's our question. What are all the possible part of speech tags for the sentence Fed raises interest rates? And Fed here, the sentence is taken from an American corpus. Fed is the federal office. Fed is not a person. So is Fed a verb, raises a noun, interest a verb, and rates a proper noun? Or Fed is a proper noun, raises is a noun, or a verb, interest is a verb, and rates is a noun. Or Fed is a proper noun, raises is a verb or a noun, interest is a verb or a noun, and rates is a verb or a noun. And finally, fed is a proper noun, raises is a noun or a verb, interest is a verb or a noun, and rates is a noun. So read this a bit till I hit the button that actually counts things. This is a real sentence from a real corpus, in case I did not make it up. Correct, it's C, though marginally with D. Okay, let's actually see what's happening. So, number three, fed is a proper noun because this is the US government federal office, so this is a proper noun, not a noun. Raises can be a verb or a noun. So my pay raises, like the increase in your salary, or I raise something. Interest is either the interest, like the interest rate, or it can be I'm interested in something. And noun, and rates can either be a verb or a noun, so the rates of the interest, or it could be I rate somebody. I rate them as trustworthy. Okay? So every sentence, every word in this sentence, except for fed, has two parts of speech. Yes, let's simplify, yes. So I could have said fed is, again, ambiguous, but here it wasn't. It's a federal office, it's clear from the context, but that's actually a good point. So what your colleague here is saying, that fed could be possibly ambiguous between a proper noun and a verb, i.e. the dog was fed, okay? Beautiful, natural language is really beautiful. All right, clicker question number two. Okay, how many syntactic trees does the sentence fed raises interest rates give rise to? 1, 2, 3, or 4? And I realize this is kind of hard without actually sitting down and doing the trees. But let's see, you may have intuitions. I'm going to have a heart attack. Okay, no, it's not D. The trees are three. So those of you who did C won, but it's unfortunately split between B and C. Okay, let's have a look at the trees. Let's eliminate this. Right, so these are our trees. So Fed raises interest rates. This is the one where raises is a verb, and the interest rates is a compound noun, a unit, interest rates. The other one is fed raises, so the raises is a noun here, interest rates, so interest is a verb, and the noun is, these sentences, these analyses do not make sense, right? We get, pathologic trees. And the third one, fed raises interest, so this is grouped as one structure, rates, and then it can continue like 5%. So rates is a verb here. Yes?
Shouldn't there be eight trees because there's two options for every word, right? So combinatorially, we should give eight trees.
If we had all the rules. I didn't have all the rules in the grammar, so actually the clicker should give you the grammar, but because this is not assessed. But you're right, if you had rules to cover everything, it would be 8, but some of the rules don't make sense, and these are like 3 approaches that I had a grammar and I played with it at work, at my office, and this is the analysis that it gave me. But did you understand the question? The question was actually, it made sense. If you wanted to cover all the parts of speech, then you could at least have 8. You could have more, actually, depending on how many non-terminals you have, right, and how you have structured your grammar. Okay, so now we'll move on to parsing, and we're going to do a little bit today, and we continue Thursday. So what is a parser? You should know this by now, right? It's not a disease. It's an algorithm that computes a structure for an input string given a grammar. So we have a grammar, and then we have an algorithm, and the algorithm will take the grammar and will produce a representation of our string. There's 2 things we need to worry about when we parse. This is kind of important. Directionality. So this is the sequence in which structures are constructed, and it could be top-down, we start from the top, or bottom-up. So we start from the non-terminals and go down, or we start from the words and go up. And the search strategy, so this is also important, it's the order in which the search space of possible analysis is visited or explored. Up, So it could be depth first, so we explore one possibility all the way till we find that it's not good for us and then we backtrack. Or it could be depth first, breadth first, we explore everything at the same time and we go like, you know, one part of the search explores all the possibilities together, then the next level, the next level, the next level. Now, you have already seen LL1. Today we will look at recursive descent parsing and shift-reduce parsers, and then we'll spend some time talking about the CYK algorithm. This is actually used everywhere these days. So if you want to build a parser, the first thing you will do is implement the CYK algorithm. And then we will look at the early algorithm, which is an improved version of CYK. So what is a recursive descent parser? So this is a stupid parser, okay? This is to show you that you could solve this problem in a not good way. So it treats a grammar as a specification of how to break down a top-level goal into sub-goals. So the parser will search through the trees licensed by the grammar until it finds one that has the sentence along its yield. So this is real search. We search for the tree that will actually cover all the words in the sentence. And so it goes top down, so it starts from the start symbol and goes down until it hits the words. And the directionality is depth first. So it expands a given terminal as far as possible before proceeding to the next one. And this is the algorithm. This algorithm actually you could implement. I will read it to you, but I will summarize. So our goal is to come up with a tree for our start symbol, which is usually S. Okay, so we need to find a tree for the sentence, and the tree will start with S. So we start with the top node. Then we choose a grammatical rule with S as its left-hand side, and we replace it with the right-hand side of the rule. And the sub-goals here would be the noun phrase and the verb phrase, for example. Then we choose a rule with the leftmost sub-goal as its left-hand side. So we'll take the leftmost sub-goal, and we will choose a rule that has this as its left-hand side. We will replace it, and we keep doing that till we find the lexical rule. So we iteratively keep substituting, till we hit a word, or till we hit a rule that expands to a terminal, i.e. a word. Now, once we find this word, now it gets a bit interesting, or stupid, you would say. If it matches, so if the lexical terminal matches a rule, then we move on to the next set of rules, the next position in the input, so the next word. If it doesn't, we try the next lexical rule with the same left-hand side. So we try another rule that has this terminal at its left-hand side. If no rules with the same left-hand side match, then we backtrack to the most recent choice of grammatical rule and choose another rule with the same left-hand side. So if we don't find anything to match our input, we will go to one level up, use another rule, and keep doing this till we consume all rules. And on failure, we always backtrack. I'll show you a demo of how this works. Okay, so I don't know whether you can see this. Here it says the dog saw a man in the park. And we want to do to parse this using recursive descent parsing. So we'll start with S, okay? And what does S expand to? NPVP. Then I will expand the NP into determiner, noun, and prepositional phrase. Then I will expand the determiner to they. And now what happens? Bingo. It matches. Then I move on to the noun phrase. The noun phrase goes to man. Here, though, I don't have a match because my input is dog, not man. So I try another lexical rule, park. Unfortunately, I have a dog. Oh, here I found the dog. Good. Now, next we're in a bit of a problem because I have a preposition, and a preposition expands to a preposition, and the noun phrase is so a preposition? No. So here, I try all my prepositions, in, but in doesn't match with so I backtrack. I forget the dog and so, and I start all over again. It's beautiful, isn't it? So dog matches, then I try another rule. VP goes to V. This is doing a bit better. At least I can match so. A, man, I'm looking good. In the park. Okay, you see the problem now? Dead end PP, I don't have a PP. I can match the park, but I have this thing hanging off the tree. What do I do? What do I do? I start all over. Okay, you see, frustrating. Okay, I matched the man, I matched in the park. Finally, I'm done. I have done this thing 3 or 4 times. Inefficient. Because it's just rule matching. Let's see if shift reduce can do better. This is a bit more satisfactory, shift reduce. Okay. As shift reduce parser tries to find sequences of words and phrases that correspond to the right-hand side of a grammar production and replace them with the left-hand side. So it's a different philosophy from recursive descent parsing. The directionality is bottom-up now. So we don't start with the terminals, with the non-terminals, we start with the terminals. So we start with the words. And we try to build trees from the words up. Our strategy is breadth first. We start with the words and then apply rules with matching right-hand sides. And we keep doing that till we reach a sentence. So this is the algorithm sketch. Until the words in the sentence are substituted with S, until we hit the most high-level non-terminal, we scan through the input until we recognize something that corresponds to a right-hand side of one of the production rules. So we look at the words and we say, do I have a rule for these words? So we scan left to right, the man. Do I have a rule that covers the man? Then the rule fires. We apply a production rule in reverse, i.e. replace the right-hand side of the rule, which appears in the sentential form, with the left-hand side of the rule. These are the two operations, shift and reduce, and you will see in the example later on how we do it. Now, usually, a shift-reduce parser is implemented using the stacks. So you must remember them from John's lectures. So we start with an empty stack, and a shift action pushes the input onto the stack. What is our input here? The words. At least one person is not sleeping in the audience. Okay, we put the words onto the stack. A reduce action replaces n items, i.e. n words, with a single item. And what would the single item be? Non-terminals. Good. A second person awake. Okay, let's see how it goes. Again, my dog saw a man in the park. What do I have to do now? Assume the stack is here. I need to shift my to the stack. So I shift my to the stack, and I found already a rule that gives you my. It's the determiner. Then I shift dog to the stack. What do I do now? The dog, if I have a rule that says NP goes to determine a noun phrase, I can reduce this to thy dog. But you see, it's a different philosophy from the recursive descent parsing in the sense that I build small things bottom up. I don't want to start with the whole tree from the beginning. Now, saw, well, I skipped some steps here. So we shift saw to the stack. Nothing happens at the moment. And then a man, we shift a and man, and then we reduce to noun phrase. And then we also shift and reduce in the park. Now, at this point, I have no input to consume, and I have a stack full of things, and I should start reducing. So I will combine the NP and the PP to an NP, then I will combine the VP and the NP to a VP, and finally the NP and the VP to a sentence. And then I'm done. Okay? Is it clear to people how these two algorithms do things differently? Right. But in the end of the day, do they actually do anything with ambiguity? No, because they both would return as many analyses as there are according to my grammar. So they're inefficient in the way the computer structures, and they're inefficient in the sense that they don't actually disambiguate anything. Okay, these demos, you can try them using the NLTK toolkit, and I would recommend this to see a bit. You can write your own grammars, you can see how these things work. And I'll leave you with a summary. So we talked about using context-free grammars to represent language. We talked about structural ambiguity, about how we will turn the grammars in such a way so as to represent infinite sentences. And we introduced two types of parsers, recursive descent parsing and shift-reduce parsing, that are different in the strategy of parsing and in the way they do the search. And now we begin a period where we only talk about parsing. So this lecture and till the end of the week, we'll still be talking about parsing, and next week as well. And I'll take any questions if there are. Okay. And I'll let you go. Have a nice evening. Grammars, yes. Yes, in our department, Mark Stidman is. They are mildly context sensitive.
So they're more like natural.
Yes, yes.
Why only that person is using them?
No, I mean, because these are much easier. Categorical grammars, you know, they are difficult to deal with. They have like lots of lexical entries, and combinatorially it's a problem. But they're better linguistically.
Is one of the next ones going to be used before we did last lecture with the table of probability?
Yes.
Okay, so
yes. Yes, so what we did, the algorithm, the dynamic algorithm, we did again when we did all this
I told this to my tutor, Christos. Yeah, okay. When you take speeches, so the speech goes like this, a dash. There is, yeah. So it goes like, it's parsing, and then, so I have a word for the dash itself, and the word after the dash. So the dash is translated to such a character called backslash A1. And the character which comes after takes the next. So let's say the character that comes after a car, it would be the next car. It's so weird. I was so confused.
I'll tell you. Thank you very much. Did you guys want to ask me something?
I was wondering if you think about specializing speech processing later on.
Right.
I was wondering if there's any way to get involved in some sort of process in intern. My second year, I'm also taking linguistics too.
Yes, yes, there is internships. You're a bit early for this. I'll say in Thursdays or Fridays actually a bit about, you know, if you want to do internships, these are the opportunities. Okay, so it's, you have to apply and it's a small project and whatnot, but I'll say it in class. Okay, I don't know off the top of my head what exactly the procedure is, but we've had interns before.
Okay, won't be in class on Thursday because my lecture clashes with software engineering.
This lecture?
Yes, this lecture. Because in taking linguistics students, I was the only one that was taking linguistics to another informatics course,
right.
So they didn't make an exception for me, so I'm not going to be here on Thursday lecture.
That's all right. I'm sorry about this. I'm sorry, but you're going to be on Friday?
Yeah.
Okay,
but
all right.
Just watching the videos.
Okay, good. Oh, the videos are, oh my God. Okay, I don't want to watch them. Yes, yes.
I'm sure, I just need two questions. The first thing is, it says assignment 2 in large letters on the top.
Yeah,
is it supposed to be assignment 1?
No,
or
it's
only assignment
1. There was no other assignment. Okay. I thought I corrected this. Anyway.
The other thing, just to add,
I'll fix this, actually.
There's a discrepancy between the name of the function in one of the functions, I can't remember which one, in the first thing in TTS. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you know how you name each
Yes.
The function is named differently in the assignment.
I'll fix this. In the actual tar file that they give you. Okay, I'll fix this and explain in class. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Yes. No, humans will mark it. No, they will print out the code and you get partial credit even if... No, it's not automatic. No, because, you know, sometimes people make mistakes. No, no way. No. People are marking it. No, don't worry. Okay. No. It's not. Obviously, we know it's correct if it gives the correct answer, but we'll actually look at... Yeah. All right. Take care. Yes.
Question of the assignment, third question, where you're supposed to write a grammar.
Yes.
I wrote a grammar that recognizes a bunch of sentences, but I'm not sure that the grammar will produce nonsense if you use to produce them. Is that important?
No, that's not important, as long as you can parse the sentence that we give you. Yes.
Right, thank you.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah. See, this building, criminal. Okay. You had a question? No. You don't have a question. You tagged along with him. Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's
Thank you.